Okay, I would like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water in September 18th at 5:59. Do we have any public input tonight?
We do not.
Okay. Do we need to go into executive session?
We do not.
Excellent. Let's go over the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to last month's meeting minutes?
I did not.
I didn't either. Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I did not.
Ian, any questions on the check register?
No, I didn't have any
Not
this
so.
month.
I had a couple. One was there was a capital roof replacement for 9276.
Yes, that was for the building we're selling. It was the HOA news. They're redoing the roofs on all of them.
Oh, okay.
So that's our share.
Okay. And then
Before we sell, of course.
I noticed we had a $500 bonus for people who've been here 25 years, and that seemed light for somebody that's been here for 25 years, but
The great debate of what is fair.
yeah.
Is that per the policy or is what's it based on?
It was based on, without trying to set a long-term precedent and based with in our budget and what I could approve.
Well, it was nice. That was nice. And do we have any purchase orders?
No purchase orders.
No purchase orders. Okay. Are there any other questions on the consent agenda? Somebody like to make a motion?
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that's unanimous. Steve, what do you have for us?
Well, let's start with a review of results through August before we get into the revenue discussion for the 2026 budget. So through August, things continued very positively for the district as far as revenue. Although usage and the pressure on our wells and treatment plant continued very high. So we are well above budget. As you can see, we're 3.46 million better than budget, with 2.85 million of that coming from revenue and the rest coming from cost savings. On the revenue side, water sales down a little bit are now next thing. Oh, oops, I missed something, sorry. Right there, yeah. Are over $2 million over budget. And that is really because we're 32.5% higher than the 4-year average on usage. So usage just continued to be crazy. As we kind of said around the office, we had 3 Julys this year, one in June, one in July, and one again in August. So really 3 peak months, which has driven the revenue quite high. Park City, Wheeling, as you can see, is almost exactly on budget. They had their biggest month of the year during August. They took 83 million gallons as well as wheeled to them. Then if you look at development-related collections, it's under budget by 123,000. But that's more of an accounting issue. As you recall, the auditors last year, after we'd already done the 2025 budget, wanted us to treat how the assessments we received from Promontory differently. We don't book them as revenue and then take them against the receivable. They go right to the receivable less. So that'll be adjusted in the 2026 budget. If you reversed out that change, then we're only $17,000, almost $18,000 above budget. So very close to budget on our development-related collections. On the other revenue, the reason we're $911,000 better is really mainly two factors. Again, recall the check we received from the IRS for the solar array, that wasn't in the budget because we couldn't guarantee actually getting it. And then the interest earnings have remained high this year. So that's why that variance. Expenses were doing well. You know, a lot of still saving in operations, maintenance, and repairs. We're doing our best on estimating Rocky Mountain Power charges. We finally did get a bill that for $100,000 that kind of covered 2 months for most of the meters. Then we got a nice bill for $20,000 that covered half the meters for 1 month. And so it's just no rhyme or reason to when or how we get those bills. But I think based off previous history and things like that, I'm trying to make an entry and accrue the appropriate expense, but doing well. Probably the biggest key is when we compare to last year, we're 4.6 higher in expense, 4.6% higher than last year, which is really kind of where we try to be, a 3 to 5% increase in expenses year over year, just kind of inflation and things like that. But maybe we'd over budgeted a little bit on expenses, but not quite willing to say that just yet. As far as cash on the next page down, probably the most interesting thing to look at on this is if you see how cash hardly changed at all in the big scope. We were 32.3 million last month, we're 32.3 million this, only $25,000 increase, which basically means sales were so high in July, as we were collecting all that money, we not only covered all our expenses, we basically covered the payments to Oakland for the construction and things like that.
Wow.
So that's why cash, because I would have earlier projected that cash would go down with how the paying Oakland, but collections were so high. Let's go to growth. It was actually kind of a slow month for new impact fees and collections. If you look at last month, we were at 76 and we're only at 80. We really only got four new impact fees during August, and the impact fee only went up like $20,000 for the revenue for the year. Still fine for budget. The budget for the year is 600,000, we're at 544, and we have received a little bit more already in September. So we'll probably end close to 2023 numbers, I would guess, maybe a little bit higher. So growth, kind of what we expected. Okay, and then this is the last slide, but the one that kind of created all the other numbers. So again, if you just look at August, over the 4-year average, we're 41.2% above the 4-year average. What's funny is Promontory Golf is exactly 41.2% over your 4-year average too. I did double check the math. Those are two different formulas. It's just not copy and paste. That's actually how those turned out. So August was even higher than previous August, then July was higher than previous July, let's say. And then if you go down just a little bit, we look at the year, that's where the 32.5% number over the 4-year average. So looking at that first column on the right, the acre feet, we were all the way up to 17, we're up to 1,774 acre feet to our own customers directly. Last year, which has historically been our highest year, we were only at 1,528. So you can see, again, just usage higher than we've ever seen in the district. And the graph reflects that. So it did come down from July, but still well above what was budgeted and what was expected. And the last one just shows that most of that came from retail. Doing pretty good estimating on the others, but retail customers have really just been going through a lot more than we thought they would. And with the tier increase last year, that generated quite a bit of revenue because a lot more customers are getting it from those high rate tiers, let's say. So that's it for kind of financials through August. Any questions on that?
I feel like last month we thought the pace at which we were using water was a little unsustainable, and I was hoping that we would see maybe some of the conservation rates change some behavior in August. Do you feel like that's happening at all, or?
It was interesting. In 2022, when we implemented the drought rates, there was definitely June was high. People reacted to the high bills, and really kind of calmed their usage down. This year, we've had, it seems like every time we have some customers get better, other customers get worse. So we're still having this really high usage. If some kind of got a really big deal, they kind of curtailed their usage, but others just kept ramping up. So we're not sure if it was, granted, the drop rates were a little bit higher than our current rates. There was also a lot of messaging before about Great Salt Lake and things like that, and it just hasn't been that push. So we think it might be a combination of the rates aren't quite as high. Maybe the financial impact on people wasn't quite as severe as then. And the messaging, just the peer pressure to not use as much water hasn't been as high. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next year if Great Salt Lake continues to drop and messaging picks up again or something like that. So yeah, it was a little disappointing, the monsoon never really set up in August. We usually almost, you can almost count on you a week of good rain and kind of people slow down more than they did this year, let's say. So I'll have to defer to engineering about sustainable or not.
Well, yeah, I'm just kind of wondering if there's, I don't know if there's any pressure that we can put on the users that might be using a lot, whether we can say, hey, can you do it differently, or if we just don't, if we want to do that, if we don't want to do that, or
Some targeted messaging, as we've talked about, and maybe some smart installing smart irrigation meters on some of our high users for next year, I think could help decrease the usage.
And we've also talked about going to the odd even, getting people stop trying to stop people from watering every day, because we have a lot of customers that water every day. We have had some call in or stop in, and they can't believe that they're using as much water as they are, and her crew pull up the eye on water, and they can show your watering starts at 4 a.m. and it doesn't shut off till 12 noon every day. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that rely on landscapers to play with their irrigation meter, and they go in and make the adjustments, and the homeowner doesn't know. So hopefully, we'll see difference, or we're going to have to force a difference next year. We have to balance the revenue.
Yeah.
How would you define the unsustainability that Karen mentioned from a financial perspective? Do we anticipate seeing more breakdowns that are gonna cost? Are we gonna see unexpected costs associated with it?
It's possible because we're running things harder and longer, more chemical costs, and things like that. Have we seen any more leaks this summer than other summers? I don't think so, Brian. I mean, our leaks are kind of on par, but we've seen more pump, motor, different issues like that. But we're going to make a concerted effort to chain or pull pumps and do preventive maintenance on them on our schedule instead of waiting for something to fail. One of the things that we're noticing is there are fewer and fewer entities that are willing to pull and service the pumps and motors. We were talking to Weber Basin today, and they're kind of in the same ballgame, and the experienced repair people are retiring or leaving. And so then you have to get in a queue waiting for something to come back. And so there are those consequences that we're trying to mitigate.
And for next year, though I'm usually not going to say it's good, we're losing revenue, but the fact that Weber Basin, we don't have any water in the through the regionalization agreement next year. So 500 acre feet we sent through them this year, we get it used back in-house next year. Because the timing of getting that back and getting the treatment plant expansion done seems like that's working a lot closer. At one point in time, it seemed like we were pulling it back a little too fast. But when you see a usage year like this, you go, okay, that was probably timed pretty well to not be committed to send them any water until the treatment plant expansion is done again. But yeah, I'm speaking for Brian. I'm sure he's glad that next year we don't have to do that on top if we had another big usage year, because that'll help a little bit. Yes, take a little pressure off. And then by 2029, when the treatment plant's done and we can pull more out of the river, get it treated and out, and into the that should be okay. But yeah, 2027, 2028 could be interesting if we have really high usage years for sure. Getting there now.
Yeah.
Getting across the bridge now to the treatment plant expansion problem. All right. Thanks. Those are good questions and insights. Okay. There was a memo that kind of described, I won't read that all, but let's just kind of jump to the first table for the picture. You can read that maybe to help you understand what I talked about a little bit, or if you pre-read it, that's great. So the far left column is our budget for 2025. And let's just go along that top line. So water sales, we budgeted 12,725,000. We're now projected, like I said, about 2 million above that. And our budget for 2026 is 14.5 million, or an increase in what we're budgeting of almost 1.8 million, or 14%. What that 14% is made up of is a rate increase that averages out to be about 4.5%. It also has customer growth of about 2%. And then the usage number is about an 8% growth in usage that we're using to project. So that's how we get to a 14% jump, because it feels like a big jump from budget. But when you kind of look at the revenue we generated this year, it makes more sense. We're actually budgeting for a little less, even though we're putting a rate increase. When we created the 2025 budget, we didn't have great. 2022 was in our 3-year window, and that was a hard year to average in because usage was strained because of the drought restrictions.
Yeah.
So we only averaged 23 and 24, which ended up being kind of a light, let's say, average. Now we're averaging 23 and 24 and 25. So that's why the usage used to generate the revenue projection is higher. Because Lisa and Andy and I went over this. I'm like, can we really do that? Can we really do that? And as you back into why we were where we were and why we are now, it felt okay. Park City, Wheeling, 600, 600. I did bump their budget just a little bit, because they are going to start to have to serve more water to some of the water as we come off. Again, with them, it's kind of a cost thing. So it's not like a real revenue generator, but it'll most likely be higher. The Weber Basin line, you'll see we're right on budget. Obviously, it's by contract, but that's what drops off next year. So we don't get any revenue there. So we lose $887,000. Operating fees, we always kind of budget the same, and other operating kind of the same. So
What are operating fees?
those are like meter installations,
Okay.
things like that. Title transfers, kind of that kind of stuff. So operating revenue, we're actually projecting to go up 6%. And of course, that's mainly water sales. Now we're projecting higher usage with a rate increase. If you look at non-operating revenue, let's kind of go across line by line again. So interest, we budgeted over $1 million. We're going to probably be about 1.2. So a positive variance. Next year it drops to 650,000. And that's because we've been making interest on all the construction money
Okay.
for
Yeah, I
the.
was wondering if it was the construction money or if we really thought interest was going to drop to half.
No, I've built kind of by month what I think the cash balances were, building some rate decreases. I'll do it one more time. The Fed really have cut, but I can kind of build that in. But that's why the drop is we don't have the construction money that we're making interest on. Impact fees. You know, we're getting enough signals that it's kind of coming back a little bit, and we're going to be over budget for 2025. So I did increase that by 100,000. feel very comfortable with that. Plus, our new impact fee that we will go over next month is the increase in the impact fee because we have updated costs on treatment plan and things like that. So that felt like a pretty easy reach to pick up another 100,000 there. The promontory assessments, that's the accounting issue with the auditors. So that's why I have to take that out of the budget there. And the rest pretty much stays the same. The other non-cash operating, it's usually $30,000 a year. This is like inspection fees and things like that for new developers. The reason it was so high last year is we're selling the building and we got to put that revenue somewhere. So that's why the budget was so high in 2025. But in 2026, we can kind of go back to our historical there. So we do have a drop in the non-operating revenue. All makes sense. It's fine. The budgeted revenue still generate about a 1.52 ratio. If you recall, 1.25 is our bare minimum. 1.52 is like right around 1.5 is where we like to budget to generate enough money for capital projects. So you'll see all that next month when we go over the actual budget, or initial preliminary budget. All right, the next page. So we're recommending a flat rate increase with a slight change. In that we're looking at the base of just going from 73 to 75.50 at about a 3.5%. There's still a lot of people who do watch their bills, who that's base is important, or if you're not using much water and things like that. And then, but for the tiers, we'll do 5%, pretty much all the tiers, a little rounding in there to get where we need to be. So last year, we really jumped the tiers, and we've kind of done that every other year, and it's seeming to work well. I like how it plays out. So next year, we probably do more of a tier and try to control usage or do what. For 2027's budget, and then kind of go back to base, kind of like pull this one, then kind of back and forth. But that's what we're looking at for our residential customers for next year. If you recall, when we were first talking about this, we were targeting and thinking more around a 6%. So we've been able to do a little better because of usage, because of some things like that. So we don't think we have to push a 6% rate increase through this year. All right.
Do we so I know we've been going back and forth on that, where we hit the conservation rates and I'm just wondering, based on 2025 behavior, whether we should reconsider. I mean, I guess I want to be I want to be respectful to the ratepayers that use, the right amount of water and
So a higher increase in the heavy for the heavy users.
Right. I have to believe at some point that will help change behavior and it might actually, I just feel like if we're going into the new treatment plant and, we could be bumping up against our limits on water, it seems like we should think about doing our rates so that they might help change the behavior of some of the higher tiers.
Do you have a recommendation of where that break would it be 20 to 30 or 30 to 40? And
Well, so I thought I saw something in which, like, we had, isn't your average maybe in the summertime what between 30 and 40?
yeah, that would probably be a good for, let's say, an average user. Or if you actually go down to the next slide for just a second, Chris.
Yeah, I thought there was a slide that had.
Yeah. So let's sorry. I'm just wanted to. Okay. The third line down, let's say that's kind of a slightly bigger than an average user in our system. We call them above average. So their water bill, for 30,000 gallons with the new rates would be about $265.80. Everybody following me in July, August, September. Sorry, lots of numbers, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so right here, that's 30,000 gallons would cost them 265. Because we've tried to keep, okay, we're really trying to cooperate with you to keep a landscape alive. You probably need to use
that much, you know, if you're responsible. But where you really see it jumps pretty big, yet that next 30,000 gallons, you go from 265 to 895.
So starting to get punitive, but then when you jump it to the 100,000 is where it really gets punitive. So this is where there aren't as many customers obviously doing that, but that's where the rates really start to impact the water bill, let's say. We could add some to, I would think, you know, 60,000 and above pretty easily. We could sneak a little bit more into here. The one thing I worry about is if usage is high, we're going to really generate a lot of revenue again. And I don't want to be always having rate increases and being way over budget, but that's just a thought. That's not
Karen, how we need to govern things.
Are you suggesting like a small user maybe do a flat rate increase, but shift that a little more down?
Flat being not change the 73 base.
No, the base would stay, but you're 0 to 5,000. You know, maybe that doesn't need a rate increase. But right. If you get down to the 30 or 40, if the average is 30, but maybe we need to push that average down to 20 or 25. Meaning change the behavior so that becomes our average. So you have a higher rate increase, 30,000 and beyond.
I certainly would support something like that where, you know, let's say your average, you know, user in our district, or maybe it's not average, but your standard, you know, your guy that lives on a, you know, quarter to a half acre lot, you know, 3,000 square feet, you know, that guy probably shouldn't be penalized unless he was, you know, he had a large lawn and he was overwatering or something. But I feel like that user might change, you know, even doing the 30 to 40 might get somebody to really care about watering every other day or watering three times a week or.
Okay. Because it does become just a math formula, let's say. Like, I know we need to generate so much money. How do I generate it? So it's easy to come, even for budget next month, I could say, here's the budget. We need to have $14,500,000 of water sales. And we can do it through this rate increase, or we could do it through this rate increase. And give you a couple options to choose from. That's not a lot of extra work for me. Let's say that's very doable.
Okay.
So let me work on that.
I mean, what does the rest of the board think?
So, yeah, I have a lot to say.
Okay.
I just wanted to give you your time because I think you're spot on. You're exactly where I was at last year. And I agree with you in theory, with the exception of a comment that Steve made was that if we go about that kind of a rate increase, a more punitive rate increase on the high end every other year, it kind of tempers our behavior on the rate increase side. All of these rate increases that he's got labeled as potential or.
Yeah. Oh, whoops, I said 26. My apologies.
That's fine. Those are all starting at the rate that we approved last year. And last year's rate increase was very much in line with what you're suggesting. Mm-hmm. I pulled it up.
I think we went from 35 to 55 or something like that on that bottom tier.
Yeah, they were huge. I just lost it for some reason. I had it.
Maybe it was 36.
But instead of being 5% clear across the board, it was... Gosh, I'm feeling foolish all of a sudden. Anyway, the rate increases went up into the 35 range on those lower tiers instead of 5%. That isn't negated by this. That's kind of carried through.
True.
Mm-hmm. It's in place.
Right. So I don't have any, like, positive feedback there, just I guess kind of my position on it. That we did that last year. if we do it again this year, we're not just kind of continuing with what we did last year. We're compounding it significantly. You know, a 35% rate increase 2 years in a row on a super user tier is what you're looking at, a, you know, 50% compounded rate increase over 2 years. That's significant. We shouldn't ignore that, I guess, is my point.
And of course, these aren't drought rates either. So if we go into a drought situation, those rates become much more punitive.
Yeah. Park City, they did a rate increase that probably all some of you know, where they kind of had a very low threshold, and depending on lot size, and once you went above it, it was $75 per thousand, which is higher than our 5775. They backpedaled that to $37.54 for anything like above 60,000 gallons. So our high tiers are still going to be significantly higher than what other people pay, but our low tiers are also lower than what other people pay. So in a way, we're already the most conservation-minded model, but at the same time, yeah. Maybe it's not that they're 33%. Maybe it's that those bottom ones are 10%.
So I've got it in front of me again.
Yeah.
Starting at 0 to 5,000, we were at 4.2, then 6.8, 14%, 27%, 35%, 36%, 39%, and 46%. So I don't disagree with you. I would love to see some sort of kind of a scale tier here as well. But I don't feel like there's as much urgency this year as there was last year, just because we did do so much of it last year.
I like the concept. I think that if you're in one of those bottom two user groups and you're the ideal customer that Mountain Regional would like to have, so we can continue to grow our community. I don't think there should be any rate increase on those if we can accommodate it. And yeah, I think revenue wise, that's a smaller bucket, and I'm fine spreading that across the higher tiers.
Sorry, in on the top two or the bottom two?
The two lowest user groups, like
got
they
it.
Use the least water. I was trying to say it in a way so you knew what I was talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, I get it. I'm slow.
Use the least amount of water.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
I know that some people think the highest user group is our ideal customer, and we'd all love to have them financially. Steve, I'm looking at you. But yeah, you know where I'm coming from.
I know. You know, and I think I asked the question last year, and I'm going to botch it, but you guys have a category that you call super users, correct?
I don't know if we...
Yeah.
We probably...
I think it's obscene to use that much tuna.
Yeah.
In 1 month.
And I feel like I asked how many users were in that category last year, residential users, and the number sticking out in my head is 17. I don't know if that's accurate.
This year, we hit 61.
61 that you would consider to be
that are paying bills that include the $55 rate.
61
above 100,000.
Know. Above 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of empathy for somebody
that's in one
county. Well, I guess the other thing about it is that if they're using that much water, they should have paid a higher impact fee when they built their house, and you know, so. And this is kind of our way to get our impact fee back.
Yeah. Or some of them did pay big impact fees. So in a way, they got multiple tiers of that all going through. So let's say you have 2 billing units. You paid 2 ERCs. To get into that billing tier, you actually have to use 200,000 gallons. And so we have those.
So we have a user that has 1 billing unit, uses 1 million gallons. We have a different user with 14 billing units using 1 million gallons, and the 14 unit pays less than the one, but they paid a higher best fee. They pay a higher base. It's
One thing to Ian's comment before we go too far is I agree that we don't want to touch those. It would be good to not have the rate increase in those lower tiers. There is an element when you actually look at the revenue and how it comes in, messing around with that 5,000 to 20,000 tier moves the needle a lot because that's where most of the revenue is generated because everybody is in that tier. Whereas when you're talking about over the 100,000, even though it's a really high dollar amount, there's only 60 customers in it. So that tier doesn't generate as much revenue as tier two. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if I pull the 5% out of the 5 to 20, it doesn't proportionally spread. I have to actually increase those higher tiers more to make up that money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Understood.
Please, thumbs up.
Yeah.
But he just gave you a thumbs up.
Okay.
Did you have any thoughts, Mike?
How many scenarios do you want? I mean, we can play with it. It's a little hard to play with it too live because it's just, even though I can change it, there's a lot of moving parts, let's say. So it's hard to change live in a meeting, but I could definitely come with two or three, this one, maybe one where it's 10% or 15% in those highest tiers and a little less in the early tiers. And I'll try to come up with three that kind of seem like a balance between this and one kind of mid-step and one that's
okay,
very aggressive, more aggressive tiers. Again, how does that sound?
Yeah, and I think if you could tune your scenarios more towards the two highlighted cells currently, because I'm taking your comment to heart. I think if you're trying to get those first two columns or rows to 4%, it might have, a visually huge impact on the lower tiers, but mathematically it's just not going to compute.
So maybe I'll show 24 rates, 23 rates, and then 25 to give us that. And then kind of how I'm saying how much we'll generate. So the 30-cent increase in that tier two generates a lot more revenue than the $2.75 increase to the highest tier. But I'll see if I can show that some way. So you guys can kind of see that too.
A revenue column.
A revenue column by tier along those. Okay. And it'll probably just be based on, again, all of our other rates, commercial and things like that, will adjust the same. But the residential is really what drives the revenue and drives the rate increases. So it'll probably be just focused again on the residential rate, but I'll show the revenue projected by tier at each of those kind of thing.
Okay.
And how to get to the number we need. Okay. Any great discussion, actually. Any other comments on the 26 revenue thoughts or rate increase or projections?
Now, it was really nice to have that, though, early so that we can start thinking about it going into the budget.
Okay. Right. I think I'm done.
On a few minutes.
And if most our revenue is coming in those two tiers that are highlighted, maybe it doesn't make sense going to zero. So for your scenario, Steve, maybe just drop 1% on those.
Yeah.
Like three, go down to, like maybe the second one there to 4, 3, and 2 or something. And then, see how it spreads out and how much of an impact that is in the other tiers. But okay. Not go to zero.
Maybe make $2.25, $2.30, and make $6, $6.25, or whatever that is, percentage, like 3 or 4%, and see what happens. Right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make it easier for you because it's a pain to have to redo stuff. So thanks.
You bet.
Okay. Any other Oh, you've still got a couple things. You've got impact fee analysis update and WIFIA update.
The Sam and his crew finished the IFFP, so the facilities plan. That was approved by council. So now we're recalculating, well, what does that mean to the fee? Zions Public Finance, Susie, who you may all recall, has just finished preparing a draft of that to me. And I kind of mentioned that earlier, the impact fee will be going up across all the areas, and it's basically based on the updated costs on the projects we will be doing. So we'll have that at a public hearing. That doesn't have to go back to council. You guys just approve that. Ballpark early on, maybe $1,300 more in a promontory home in the general service area might be $2,500 to $3,000 more. So what we're doing, because it didn't cost us the full fee, but now we'll be able to collect those higher impact fees for the coming years to help pay for those projects.
Perfect.
The WIFIA update, we had another call with them this morning. It went well. There are more inquiries. They see more activity in the EPA right now about loans, so they're more optimistic about ours being able to get all the way through the process and close. We have a rating from Fitch. They did tell us we just need to get a new one that shows WIFIA as our lender and the final dollar amount we're approved to lend. So I reached out to Fitch today. They've asked a few questions. We're going to respond, but it should work out fine. We'll have that before we need to close on the loan. But that still continues to go well. And surplus truck, as you may recall, we approved two of the same trucks that we were going to sell for $3,500 after they were older trucks. After they were approved, we found one of them, the power steering was going out and was going to be like over a $2,000 repair. So we took that one. It's just going to be sold at auction. We didn't feel good about selling it to anybody with that being a repair needed on it. The other one, we basically sold for $3,500. So that's the update on those surplus trucks that a few months ago you approved.
Great.
Steve, does the WIFIA loan have the option to still refinance at a lower rate? I'm right, and the feds dropped the...
Yeah, and that's really one of our strategies, because so we're going to front as much as... Because we have to have cover 20% of the costs. We're going to use our own impact fees, our own reserves. We're going to front as much as we can to try to let that rate come down before we draw. Because as soon as we take the draw, that locks the rate. Okay. So we are going to wait and hopefully be past at least the three rate cuts I think they still expect to do in the next, maybe before the year end or in the fourth quarter and first quarter of next year.
And you've got a cap on the rate. Do we have a cap on the rate?
There's not a cap on the rate, but the rate's supposed to be going. It's whatever it is at that time when we kind of set it, but rates definitely seem to have more downward pressure right now. So we're not in a hurry to close and set a rate because more likely we'll do better if we wait.
But yes, we can refinance it, but just remember that the WIFIA has a 40-year amortization, and if we refinance, we might be only able to do a 20-year bond. So you're cutting your repayment back. So even though you have a lower interest rate in a short time period, the effect of the customer may be greater because your payment is going to potentially go up.
Yeah.
So we have to balance all of that.
Okay, thank you.
Because I don't know that you can refinance a WIFIA into another WIFIA.
No, not into another WIFIA. So it's either we can make prepayments of the WIFIA once a year, as long as it's at least $1 million. We can wait to lock the rate basically until we draw.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Steve. That was really great. Andy, do you want to talk about a couple annexations?
Sure. So Peter Tomei, who was representing Junction Commons, which is the old outlet stores, they are looking to redevelop the outlets and put in some residential. They are currently a customer of Summit Water. Summit Water has indicated that they may or may not be able to service this project. And in order for the planning commission to consider this project, they need to have a will serve letter from a water provider. The only way that we could provide a willing to serve would be to have them annexed into the district. We have had discussions with Peter, letting him know that in order to do that, it would require some significant infrastructure. He has not indicated whether the lower portion of the project would be serviced by Summit. We would take on the upper portion of the project. None of that has been determined, but he is asking us to consider annexation so he can move his project along. And Corey had asked a question about where our pipes are and what it would take. Sam, do you want to explain going into under I-80?
Yeah, so we don't have a transmission or even distribution close to the project. Anything for Mountain Regional Tie-On would be significant. But the shortest distance for sure would be to come across I-80 or under I-80 by all water main into the comments. We don't really even have preliminary alignment scoped up, but we've done some back of the napkin cost provided to the developer. Another option would be coming all the way over from New Park. That avoids crossing on interstate, but those are really crowded utility corridors and it's a significant distance over. So it'd be a big investment by the developer to put that infrastructure in to serve the development. And I think they're early enough that they ultimately don't know where they're going to source the water. But kind of running all the options down, I guess. Take on it, speed on it. They also put together some preliminary estimates for water usage. This is just a really brief two-page summary provided by some consultant to their civil engineer. We've worked with these folks. They're pretty good. If you go to the bottom of the second page, just for the summary. Yeah, somewhere in that 150 acre foot number. And then just doing the math on that, that's probably somewhere in the range of 200 gallons a minute, peak day demand, something like that. So it's a significant project.
Is that all affordable housing? Do we know what kind of housing it's going to be? Or
it's going to be retail with affordable or attainable above it in the midsection or the lower parking lots, and I believe above it'll be market rate townhome type project.
Yeah, I helped them put together a really rough impact fee just because they're kicking tires again, and I think the majority of the units in our impact fee worksheet they used as, two bedroom apartments in the commercial worksheet. So it has a high density. Even compared to other water developments in the district, it'll be a high density.
So I'm not sure I understand the the mechanics. They need a will serve letter to get the plat
approved. To get through planning.
Okay. And then to get that, they have to be annexed in.
Correct.
The district. Okay. And then, but it takes extensive infrastructure. Do they bring their own?
Yes.
And pay an impact fee?
Yeah, so the general framework would be similar to any other development, where any large infrastructure water mains, for example, that the district would own in perpetuity would be installed by the developer, and then ownership would be transferred and be deeded over to the district via bill of sale.
Right, it's the source and storage and pipe. So it's the...
Right, and then have the mainline infrastructure in place, and we accept it. An individual home, or in this case, maybe a group of townhomes or apartment building. When those folks go through the building permit process, then they submit the building plans to the district. Chris's group reviews them and calculate an impact fee. And then that's assessed to the folks that are building the actual structure, whether it's a single family residence or not. The only difference on these is the cost of reviews. We'd be taking over existing customers to some extent that are currently served by Summit. So we would, which hasn't happened since I've been with the district. So we would have to come up with a framework to look at their usage, and they would be assessed for their fee to tie in the system. So this would be a hybrid. Existing folks would have to pay some sort of impact fee to tie on. Develop your mainline infrastructure, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, things the district would unlock. And then as the individual buildings, townhomes are constructed at that time, then those folks would pay impact fees for the new and future water use. And that's what kind of all these five categories that you're talking about. Like,
in addition to providing that.
Oh, yeah.
So they provided their infrastructure. So why do they pay the impact
fee? They get no credit for... on the impact fee for putting in infrastructure that's necessary to serve the development. If it wasn't the case, I suppose if they did get credit, or if we funded some of the mainline infrastructure to serve this development, I mean, essentially, water rates or ratepayers would be subsidizing development in some sense. So the framework for any development, this is an extreme example, but in Prompt or whatnot, when a new subdivision goes in, developer base for the main lines, can inspect them, accept them, take ownership, then you can pull a building permit payment.
And that impact fee covers source.
Source, storage, transmission, right, operation support. Five categories.
They would pay that in impact fee. And they would bring their own five things, wouldn't they?
No. Well, not in this case, I guess, under the framework we just discussed, the impact would be compensating the district of items. So, for example, the water, right? They'd be paying an impact fee to obtain water, right? The district currently has in perpetuity.
We would not be taking Summit water and water.
They wouldn't be building their own infrastructure and turning it over.
They would be within the project.
The linear stuff, the pipes.
Yes, the transmission line.
Yeah, but not water tanks and wells. That's in the impact people pay.
Yeah, that's a good point. right, yeah, exactly. I see what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And we can't apply impact fees to potential future maintenance of that infrastructure. Is that true? But, you know, now we're taking on X number of miles of additional pipe. And who's going to pay for the O&M of that in the future? So, the bigger question is, what incentive does the district have to even consider this?
Well, I can answer the first part now.
And then I can go on.
The theory, no, impact fees cannot pay for maintenance right. on the line.
Yeah. I just wanted to be sure.
How that should work is that then the water rates, those customers and their base rates that they're paying, that's how
they would have kind of a service.
Because now they're in our rate structure, and our rate structure is designed to cover operations.
It is possible that Summit Water will serve the lower portion and retain that. I mean, none of this is clear, and then we would only service the upper portion.
So in
but this could be the first of moving toward other potential large projects in that general area on both sides of 80.
Right. So in theory, you put a transmission line under I-80. It's directionally drilled or jagged bored or whatever the mechanism you want to use to put it in there. That's a huge liability, having a pipe underneath an interstate. No?
We have others, but that's where you're standing on. It would be additional risk, I suppose. I mean, I have less experience than Mike does with this sort of thing, but you don't take those drilling boring projects. It's very rigorous, the installation, construction observation, you know, vertical survey down to the south, thousandth of an inch. And, yeah, it would be a very rigorous process to put casing under the interstate.
And then to your point, Andy, are we allowed to address the elephant in the room? Does this open the door for water to come to Dakota Pacific? Presumably, if Summit Water doesn't have capacity to serve 400 units at Junction Commons, they don't have capacity to serve an additional 1,300 units or whatever the number happens to be at Dakota Pacific. Is that a fair statement or am I speculating?
You're speculating on the same speculation that we're speculating. I mean, this could lead to a, if you approve it and we take it to council, this could lead to a broader basin water discussion.
Sure.
You know, because currently Dakota Pacific has 39 acre feet or 39 shares that they're being told they can't use.
With Mountain Region?
No.
With Summit Water.
Correct.
Dakota Pacific or
the Junction Commons.
Okay.
So I still had some more questions on.
Sorry.
No. So if these users pay an impact fee, but our impact fee didn't have this infrastructure in it, do we have to redo our IFFP, the plan, and then?
No, because they're paying for all of that cap, that improvement that then gets turned over to the district. The district is not using any of our funds to put in that infrastructure.
Yeah. The only way of getting like the master planning process is so this isn't currently annexed or keeping our master.
Right.
So we're adding
is but it needs every
that 158. It's not talking about one of us.
Yeah.
So we redo our master plan in 2007. This was annexed, and you know, that would belong to the master plan essentially. The build on them for the district goes up. So in that sense,
yeah, our needs go up, and so then we revise our impact.
Yeah, and the following year, then, you know, in the following year, 28, we plan on redoing our impact fee anyways, but that would be how it's affected. The build-up number goes up, not by much as a percentage-wise of the whole district. Growth would look a little bit different. Again, probably, you know, a lot. But it would have small, it would have an impact on do the IFFP, but I could see there'd be other factors that could change the impact fee or build up growth projection as much or more. That's how it would impact it. Like we wouldn't say like, hey, this is coming online, we need to drill well, and now there's a new project. What we do is the build up number would be bigger, we'd still use this logistic growth curve, and you know, we'd still have our big bucket of source development projects. Maybe they shift slightly when we're seeing the come. That's the only way this would change, like the big master plan.
That's what I'm trying to understand, is how
that's what
fits into the
happen. Our build up number goes up.
And the
158.
And those needs come sooner. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't have a good gut feeling either without actually doing it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with the whole concept of the master plan is from a growth perspective, we used to play a game, it's not the right word. So we used to try and really actively predict our growth in a year, 2 years. And obviously, there's going to be a ton of variations to get the growth. And the new approach to master plan essentially says this is our ceiling. We're in the meat of our growth curve of the district. It's going to be logistically, it's going to be harder and harder to build up. And we're less worried about like trying to predict what's going to happen next year down the road. You know, more thinking about the big picture. So if the build-up number goes up a little bit, I suppose the curve will get slightly steeper. I don't think it'd be a lot. Yes, what would.
Let me ask one question. So, but this would require additional storage or tank up there, this effectively.
Good question. So, if we call it 200 GP.
That sits on the Atkinson tank.
This sits on Atkinson tank.
Okay. So.
To your point, Mike, if it made us build a tank, then we would do that. Would be in the IFMP. That would increase the impact.
Right. Correct. We wonder about, but not just for this project. Clear across the board.
Yeah, we think about a more big picture. So the big picture for more storage in the Atkinson zone is we set aside another cell of the silicon tank that's adjacent to. So we wouldn't think about doing a one-off tank and the current plan would be to expand our, you know, current facilities in Silver Creek. Having sister tanks in the same pressure zone as well, since they're like, yeah, good, well, here it's on paper. But often has limitations when you're trying to operate. So, yeah, again, the expansion of a tank could become a project that would be impactful to the wall. That's currently not. We're not showing a storage deficit anywhere in the district.
Yeah.
But the equalization storage for this project would be something like an additional 150,000 gallons, which is a lot.
Yeah, then on the other side of that, the developer could opt to build a tank and deed it to us as part of their infrastructure.
Yeah.
And that's sort of potable storage. What about fire?
Well, our map, from a master plan perspective, we essentially store in every tank zone, not necessarily every pressure zone, we have enough fire storage to meet the, have the ability or the fire flow for the highest hazard structure in that tank zone. So in the Atkinson zone, the highest hazard structure is Home Depot. So that'll continue to be the case. Yeah, the system's not sized to, you know, the concept is being we'll put out a single structure fire within a given tank zone. We're not sizing it. Even if a tank zone gets bigger, we're not saying, hey, now we need to put out three structure fires. We're still designing to the single worst case scenario. And that's the case everywhere in the district. This is by far the biggest tank zone. So maybe we make sense to take a different approach from your place. So that's the concept we've played with.
Interesting.
I have a couple more.
Yeah, okay. I'm done. Thank you.
If we made a motion to consider to annex this, and it were approved, are we on the hook to provide service here at any point in the future? I mean, is that the moment when it crosses that line from maybe to yes?
I believe that's true, Dave.
Or would it be when the will serve letter is issued? And are those two things
Yeah, I thought the annexation would just mean that eventually we could serve them, but you're saying we have to?
Well, only once you sign the plat. So you can annex them in. That doesn't guarantee that they're going to get service. They're not paying anything.
But it guarantees that we won't deny them service in the future. Is that true?
No. It means that they've annexed in and they're eligible. But Mountain Regional does not obligate itself until you sign either on the plat or you give them a will serve letter based on building permit. Once you do either one of those things, then Mountain Regional is committed.
But that's what they're asking for is the will serve letter, right? That's what they need to go to the planning commission?
So quick thing, yeah. Just like for definitions, whatever. So Dave said we sign the plan or through the building permit process, we issue a legally binding letter to this group of people. You should call that a concurrency.
Yeah.
We write will serve letters to folks pretty rarely, and usually it's tied to some sort of federal funding requirement when somebody wants one. And they're very,
what's the word? Generic?
Generic. They're non-committal.
No.
On purpose. So they want a will serve letter, this developer, to continue to make progress on planning perspective. But the annexation is the key step. We're saying, hey, we won't give you this non-binding letter without annexing. And if they do annex, then do something plan, then do yada, yada, yada down the road, apply for a building permit. Then we'll give them a binding letter. We call that a concurrency letter. So there's three, I guess there's three things. And the will serve letter has no T assumption.
Let's say that the annexation is pretty benign. Or
what's the letter say?
Is that to say that the annexation would be a pretty benign step? Or
I don't know. I guess I just say we've never not served an annexed person since I've been in the district.
Right.
And we have parts that are annexed in that we are not serving.
Yet. Yet, right? That's our boundary. So, where does the signing the plat come into the process?
It would be after they have to go through a process where they change their existing development agreement. The development agreement itself has provisions that. You know, the development agreement gives what are called use and density and general configuration of the project and how they're going to change it, that amendment to the development agreement. Then the development agreement sets out a process for them to get subdivision approvals because they're going to have to re-subdivide. After they get the development agreement amendment, if they get that, at that point in time, they can start then going through subdivision approval. And as part of that, at the conclusion, when the planning commission approves the subdivision plat, it has to be signed by all the service providers. That's the point at which you become obligated.
Yeah, because we have a signature block and we have the notes that go on the plat that commit us to it.
Is the administrative control board involved in the decision to sign the plat?
No. That's your general manager. So that's Andy's call again.
But before we sign a plat, we would have to figure out how the water's getting there. Would that be a condition precedent?
Yeah. Okay, this one's just like large magnitude. But generally for smaller developments, we put our water service agreement, infrastructure service agreements in place. And the infrastructure security agreement. It's required to have approved plans by us on how they will serve it. And then they also post assurance, so a performance bond generally. So if the developer were ever to pull out or not finish the project, again, we've never done this either, but we could potentially collect that bond and finish it as a district.
We put those safeguards in before we signed the plat.
Every time.
That's kind of, I'm just trying to understand that part of it.
Yeah, every time. They need those signed and executed. Easements need to be recorded. Assurance posted before Andy will sign the plat.
Are we ready for more questions?
Yes. Bring it on, Ian.
Could we go back to the pipeline map? Please. So to Corey's point about the risk going under I-80, it sounds like it's minimal, but what's the logic of not just running a pipeline along the south side of I-80 or even right through the middle of Kimball Junction? If the developer's on the hook for paying for it and doing it safely, I guess, why is it upon us to do the shortest distance over there?
Well, that was kind of my question, Ian, is who's paying for what? Does it come out of the impact fee or?
No, the district's not paying anything for this new infrastructure. It's possible, Ian, that it could come through Kimball, especially if Dakota Pacific needs water. And then just loop it. It could even make a big loop.
So my comment on that would be, I worry that once you've signed the plat, once you're on the hook to serve, as long as the developer can find the most cost-effective route that meets the standards and specifications of Mountain Regional Water, we wouldn't have the authority to dictate which route is utilized.
No, we have the authority before. Sam's got to sign off on it hydraulically. He can't just say, I'm going to do it here because it's easier or cheaper for me.
Sure, but if we did want to put our foot down and say going under I-80 is a risk that we're not interested in getting involved in, you have to go along the south frontage of I-80 under the bike path or whatever is there. I don't know that that's a defensible position. If going under I-80 also meets the standards and specifications of Mountain Regional Water,
you'd have to shut it down.
Could, but that's not a guarantee.
But we'd try to find.
Now, if it's a conditional use permit or something like that, you could state that condition prior to the plat being written.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is just a larger scale of what we do all the time.
Sorry, Ian, I'm taking your time, but my big concern is, like, what benefit does this provide to the existing ratepayers of Mountain Regional Water?
Well, none, I suppose, if not paying for it.
But they will be in the long run.
Yes.
There's never been a development in the history of Park City that has lowered the taxes or rates of the ratepayers.
But you could also say by adding more customers, the repair costs of different subdivisions get borne by more people. I mean, you could say that, you could play both sides of that.
Of course, but nobody's ever shown me the math to tell me I'm wrong.
No. And right now, I mean, we don't even know if this project is going to get approved or not, but as I stated before, I think this is the beginning of more similar. It potentially could open the broader discussion as we're talking about a Dakota Pacific, a Klein Dolly, or other
UOV hotels.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That whole kind of western part of western Summit County.
We never answered your question there. Just sort of going back on the alignment super early. We try and find the best alignment for the district. So if that's along the front of drug, I think that's what we push. To Corey's point, we'll develop a pushback. If there's a more cost effective option, yeah, that happens in with every development of the district. All the time, this is just a kind of a supersized example.
Sorry, can I ask a question? If we don't voluntarily do this, is there a way we are involuntarily committed? Or how would it work if we don't do it of our own volition? They would go to the county and say, county, hey, we need service. You've got a water provider of last resort, and they won't service. Is that the other path for them to go?
They could always appeal to your governing body, but odds would be very low that the county council would get involved if they haven't received some kind of recommendation from your board. I mean, they can go through the process by making their petition, and you as the board will have to make a decision on it. Your decision may be to recommend it against annexation if that's the recommendation you're going to make to the county council as the governing body. Then at that point, county council has to make a decision. But I don't know if I've ever seen the county council go against.
So if
recommendation on annexation,
if the control board denies it, it still goes to the county council?
Only the county council can grant annexations.
So this would be a recommendation, or no?
What are the criteria we should base our recommendation on?
That's up to the board to decide. I mean, you certainly have the overall direction that the county council before the county commission gave as kind of the provider of last resort, but it was in the sense that you were there to back up or rescue other private water companies. That's not what you're talking about here. Providing service to a private entity, not coming in and saving private water companies. So, I mean, it's up to you to decide what you think your standards should be to determine whether or not you'd be in favor of an annexation. And that includes the things that have been being talked about. You know, is this something that is going to benefit the district in the long run? There is something to the idea of economies of scale. If they're bringing all the infrastructure with them, more connections on the system, lower the price. But at the same time, you are going to have to maintain whatever infrastructure that they bring. That's kind of the way in of the process.
It seems similar to what we did when we were deciding whether to serve that big project by Canyons, right?
Community?
Well, didn't we have to annex the affordable housing?
Slopeside.
Yeah, Slopeside over there.
Yep.
And it does seem like it does kind of put our tentacles into another part of the system that we may have to serve in the future anyway. And we wouldn't be the ones putting in the infrastructure, they would.
This seems different to me in that it's kind of a complicated connection and there's a lot of uncertainty of whether it's the upper portion of the property or the lower portion of the property. I guess I'll just go on record. I'm not very comfortable with this.
And similar to Ian, I don't, my position is that I don't see a benefit to our customers. And if there's no benefit to our existing customers, why are we considering it? Now, I am open to all sorts of information on interconnects with the Summit Water System and how those would benefit us, paths to dictate what the alignment is, to make sure that the system works best for our maintenance needs. But as it stands with the information I've got, I can't get over the hurdle of this doesn't benefit the customers that we're serving. You want to throw in a new Mountain Regional headquarters in there, then... I'm at this point I'm interested in either tabling to next week or potentially a motion to get my language right, not I say that oh man I'm gonna stumble over words to not recommend the approval of the annexation. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, why were you guys recommending that we approve it?
It's the neutral. We were approached to see if, you know, to see what your decision is, not our decision whether we annex it or not. We understand that this is very unusual. It is very complicated because there's another water provider involved. The person that has actually brought it to us is a customer of Mountain Regional residentially to move it forward, or not forward, but bring it up for him.
So, yeah, and I don't see it as a recommendation just by virtue of it being on the agenda. I think it's an action item, but...
Oh, I thought there was something in the notes.
In the memo.
Yeah, no, it is an action item because you're either going to recommend approval or denial of this, and then it goes to the county council. So you do have to vote on it.
So when it said I recommend the board forward their recommendation, I assume that came from somebody.
Yeah. No, it, yeah. Yes. And part of it too, though, we don't have all the answers because without moving it to planning, a lot of those things have not been addressed.
And I think if this was just an adjacent property and an easy connection, it would be a no brainer, but it's not. So, I mean, I kind of feel like, and I just open it to the group, would it be fair to just ask them to go back and sharpen their pencil and come back and tell us when they know which part of the lot they want served?
Well, I think that along with how they how they believe they're going to get water from the district out to them too.
So, Dave, if we do that, are we tabling this? If the board is asking for more information?
Yep, you can table it.
So, would somebody like to make a recommendation?
I move to table item number 5 on the agenda.
Second.
Till next month.
Until we get, like, do we want to have any conditions, like, until we...
At risk of breaking Robert's Rules of Orders, I think I would like to have it on the agenda for next month. And if we don't have better information at that point, I would plan to move to send it to County Council with a negative recommendation, whatever the verbiage is there. That would be my plan.
So if the applicant cannot provide information by next month, at that point it goes directly to County Council?
No, at that point we would have this item on our agenda to consider again, at which point we could take it up. If I'm understanding rules correctly.
And get some feedback on the specifics after the board meeting, potentially.
Do we have a second?
Ian.
Okay. Yep. Okay, so our recommendation is to... Yeah.
Vote on table.
Tabling this. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so it's unanimous.
The second request for annexation is a contiguous parcel. It's another parcel located in off of Old Ranch Road. We currently have a pipe. The customer currently has a well. He's looking for a reliable source. We're getting more and more requests like this along this area. And so that is, and this one is certainly much easier. That is the request of this applicant.
Do we gain the watersheds from their well when we do this?
No, so they typically keep their well. They don't turn that over to us. Mm. Oftentimes they keep it for irrigation or other reasons, and they're just looking for the culinary connection.
You guys, this one was approved 3 or 4 years ago. This one was one you guys just did this spring.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just up the street. Currently the infrastructure stops just right in front of this corner.
Is he intending to extend it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and install a fire hydrant. Yeah, this one kind of came around. They started to apply for impact fee. We're like, well, we can't serve you. So, yeah.
So I would move to approve this motion for annexation.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, aye. Next item on the agenda.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's unanimous.
We are moving along on the office and the shop. The carpet has been put down. Furniture will be showing up on Monday.
Fancy toilets.
Yeah, I was trying to highlight the tile.
The tile's pretty.
That's our wash bay. It's hard to know what to put in and what not to put in. This is outside of our patio. Depending on the weather and the noise, maybe we'll have a board meeting out there too. A lot of the landscaping is being planted. We did end up with a couple of trees in the berms, but the parking lot's done. The fence is going up. We're still on track to be moved in. There is a hope that we can hold our October board meeting here. However, it is scheduled for the lower room in the Richens building right now. So just stay tuned as we get closer to our October meeting. Our October meeting is actually late in October. We need Rocky Mountain Power to come in and give us permanent power. There's some light fixtures and other things, but if we can meet in our new building, we will.
Fantastic.
As far as a calendaring item, on Wednesday, December 10th, 10, 12, 10 at 10, will we be having our open house, grand opening or whatever. It'll give us a couple weeks to be in that facility. As far as a new board member, unfortunately, the gentleman that Corey had recommended transferred his job up to Boise, so he no longer lives in the district. The other potential board member never applied. So if you know of anybody that's interested in coming, talking about annexations, we'd be more than happy to have them.
Have we had any applicants?
No.
Have we had ads in the paper?
So it is all run through the county. I don't know. Does Amy put anything in? It's on the county website. I know Corey's been actively recruiting.
If you're on their mailing list for volunteer opportunities, you see it. I don't know. I know that my wife doesn't get those emails, but I do. So
you got to be on that list.
And I know it's a struggle countywide right now.
Just go canvas the park after the meeting.
This is a summit water.
Ah.
So anyway, if you know of anybody that would be interested in, I mean, as far as boards go, I don't think it's a heavy lift, but we feed you, we pay you, we hang out with you. So we welcome anybody. That's all I know.
Can I just get, it looked like there was a change order on the last pay application.
So
813.
We go through change orders regularly. I don't know, Chris, if you can hold it.
Go up a little bit. Yeah. On the left hand side. Approved this month. I
the glasses on and then I want to send them.
BC
53,328.
BCO 6. Oh. So there have been some things that as we've gone through the process that have not been recognized in the design. So on the end of, if I can, my computer pulls it up, I'll tell you specifically what it is. There is a security gate that will go over the customer service area. It was installed facing out. It made more sense to put it in. That was a change order for $4,000. The ice maker that will go in the testing room, they didn't include a floor drain. So we had to add a floor drain. That was $8,000. The ceiling in the conference room, as you go from front to back, the ceiling was not built to accommodate all of the HVAC and other ducting work in it. So the ceiling had to be lowered by 1.25 inches in half of the room. That was a change order. Oh, here we go. What does it say for 6?
It says that the taxes.
Okay, and remember how we found out we're not taxed. Yeah. So it is an accumulation of several different things. We are still under budget.
Great.
And we keep telling them we don't have any more money.
Yes, I noticed in Brian's report that we were doing something with bollards.
Donating our service.
Yes, yeah, so I was wondering if that was to keep the budget down. Or
yeah, so they could either hire that out, and yeah. We just did it. It was a little more work than we thought it was going to be. But we continue to meet with them on a weekly basis. We go tour the site on a weekly basis. I talk to probably the general contractor, our superintendent, daily. So there's just a lot of different things. I mean, when we were over there yesterday, they were supposed to be a little blind in the small conference room, but the sliding door will interfere with the blind, so we got to figure that out. The architect told me that they're not paid to be perfect, and I told him, glad you're not my cardiologist.
That's all I had. I just had a question on the change.
Sure.
Okay, so does anyone have any questions on the department updates?
I had one for Brian on the... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to thank Chris for the great update on the electric bills for the new solar array. I really appreciate it. Okay. Go ahead, Ian.
I was going to ask Brian about the work for the community water tank. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we put together a bunch of plans and gave them to Aqua, trying to figure out what's going on up there. We don't know a lot of the piping that's underground. Just a lot of it doesn't make sense. So they came up with a plan for our team to go up there and do a bunch of potholing, which we did. They had a bunch of sites that they picked out where we went and potholed to try to discover what was going on in these certain areas. And, we were pretty successful. I don't know, 89% successful. There's a couple areas we couldn't get to because Vail would park a lot of stuff in the way. So that's kind of the gist, is we were just doing some search and destroy to figure out what's going on with the piping for our new connection for new tanks. Both tanks are connected, but we didn't know quite how they were connected.
Okay, so it's just so we can optimize how we're doing that moving forward.
Yeah, because there's like a well line that goes to the old tank site that we really didn't know where it went. The other tank above it floated off the one that, you know, we're going to be installing. So we just didn't know how a lot of those connections were, you know, because right now it's just, you know, an abandoned site. We're just trying to figure out, you know, what was going on right up there.
When's that work anticipated to start? Is that next year?
Yeah, we're done potholing. We're just given, you know, doing all this so they can design the tank for next year.
Cool. Okay. That was it for me. Thanks, Brian.
Corey, any questions on the department updates? Nope. Hey, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, aye. We are adjourned at 7:38.